Now, this is funny, Needham.
I know. You know, when I worked over at Universal, I took their logo and had Bert's car running around.
Smokey?
On Smokey and the Bandit playing fun and games with their logo. So I figured, what the hell, might as well do it with the Fox, too. So anyway, it always gets a chuckle.
Well, this was something they railed about initially. They didn't want us to do it. But they were so excited about the movie, they said, the hell with it.
By the way, I'm Hal Needham. I'm the director.
I'm Al Ruddy. I'm the producer of record. What we should tell you about this, when we ran this movie the first time, and we had 21, 22, 23 single card credits, the audience started to applaud at just the cast in the movie.
Well, just in the fact that very few films have that many major stars. And the other thing is, later on in the film, when you see us go out into the desert for the big fight and everything, we had like 18 or 20 motorhomes with a star in each one. Then we had trailers, star trailers that hold about six apiece. We had four or five of those. And we also had a very hot car here and a couple of hot ladies to drive it.
This was a girl who was a friend of Hal Needham's at the time, who was very talented, incidentally.
And very attractive.
You know, the interesting thing, I see Sammy's credit. Actually, the part is called Fender Bomb. We wrote it for Don Rickles. And Don Rickles, who actually liked the script, railed at the fact that Dom DeLuise, who he said was not as big a star as he was in Vegas, was in top position and making all the money. So he refused to do it, so we got Sammy to play Fender Bomb. He did have a Jewish star on his neck, so we got away with it, right?
I tell you what, the tires and the engines and the cars that we wrecked and tore up in here, you know, we should have some stock in Detroit, in Chevrolet.
Pontiac especially, remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because between what you did in Smokey,
yeah,
with that black Pontiac with the gold bird, and Pontiac was in this rather obviously, I think we ended up with a car.
Yeah.
However, Rolls-Royce didn't think they wanted to give us automobiles to be in this thing.
This Lamborghini here belonged to a doctor that we rented from, and I'm telling you, this thing would mobile. It would get down the road.
What's funny stuff. Anyway, we ought to tell them the story about how Bert agreed to do this movie. We were working desperately to try to cast the movie. To no avail, frankly, the script was not up to Gone with the Wind standards. And so Needham at that point was doing Smokey Part 2, I think.
Yeah.
With Bert, and we had spoken to Raymond Chow in Hong Kong about making Bert the highest paid actor in the history of the business to get $5 million for 4 weeks' work. So I called Hal up and I told him we're going to pay Bert $5 million for 4 weeks. We're going to send him the new script. Needham said, wait a second, you said five for four, right? I said, right. That was at 2 o'clock. At about 2:50, Needham called me back. Ruddy, you don't have to send the script. You said five for four, right? Bert's in. I said, okay.
Well, you know what? After we did a couple of car movies, he said, I'm never again going to drive a car over 35 miles an hour, but the $5 million changed his mind.
JJ.
This scene right here, nobody could play this nut, Captain Chaos, like Dom DeLuise. When I read it, I thought, well, I don't know if you can pull this off or not, but he is probably the one actor in town that I thought pulled it off very well.
Oh, it's so outrageous. It needs somebody with his flair. And then, of course, the way these two guys play off each other.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. Because they were actually friends long before this movie.
Well, yeah, Bert did a lot of stuff. Almost everywhere he went, whatever he did, he tried to bring Dom in because they're good friends.
Yeah, he likes playing off them. They really take the moments, you know, the reactions, even without the dialogue, the way they look at each other. Yeah. Fantastic.
I want you to think of your hamsters as a little army, marching along on a treadmill, running their little legs off, just running just as fast as ever, making that engine just purr right along the road.
Oh, J.J., what a wonderful way to put it.
Because I remember once Dom telling me, which I told you got me a little irritated, that he's the man that makes Burt Reynolds funny. I said, yeah, don't tell that to Burt.
You know what? Something that probably most people don't know is that the Cannonball movie was taken off of the real Cannonball Run. Brock Yates, the guy who wrote it, and myself, Brock's wife, and a crazy doctor friend of mine from UCLA, took the ambulance that you see in the movie, and we ran from Darien, Connecticut to Long Beach, California. And I'm telling you, we set some records because, first of all, I put a full-blown Hemi in the Dodge van we had. It had run 145 miles an hour. It held 90 gallons of gasoline, had four filler holes in it. When we pull up to a service station, I mean, we look like a NASCAR pit crew putting the gas in and everything. And I had a handful of 20s, and if the pump said $8, I counted it as 20. I mean, sometimes the bill would be $40 or 50, and I'd be giving the guy 60 or 70. And
really?
Then we just hit the road.
What do you mean you had four filler holes? What does that mean?
Well, we had four nozzles in it at the same time, so you didn't have to wait on one to pump 90 gallons of gas.
90 gallons?
Yeah, hell, 90 gallons.
I thought maybe you, when you said these holes, I thought you were using it to urinate as you went down the road.
No.
Did you have time to go to the gas station for that?
Oh, yeah. And what had happened is we'd pull in and stop. Brock and his wife and the doc would go to the bathroom. I'd get out and put all the hoses in and check the oil. When I come back out, Brock would have changed a transmission and did all that kind of stuff and figured out how much money we owed him. Throw the cash on them and hit the road.
This one, you went to the bathroom.
Yeah, while I went to the bathroom, yeah, correct.
And this is my faithful companion, Cato. Say hello, Cato. Been a cop long?
Captain Chaos.
Yeah, and I forgot, you were the core of the story with the gang, you know, going as medics.
Oh, yeah.
The whole idea was what you did.
We tried to figure out, because in this movie, Brock says, there's only one rule, there are no rules. So you could drive anything you wanted to, and I came up with the idea of putting an ambulance in it. And we left Darien, we got, I don't know, right across from New York or whatever highway that is, I think 87 or something, and it was 11 o'clock on Saturday night, traffic all over the place, and I said to Brock, I said, now's the time. I reach up and hit those red lights. And it was like Jesus parting the ocean. I mean,
you actually did it?
Oh, yeah.
You had the sirens going in the light?
We just went smoke right down through them and all the way across the country. Every time we got in a problem, we just hit the red lights and smoke right through.
Where's he going to sit? Where?
Listen to me, El Porco. We're not in the Indianapolis 500. We can't have a car with numbers on it. We have to camouflage the car somehow.
Like what, J.J.?
Hop on a limousine with diplomatic plates.
Nah,
I know. A bloodmobile. Never stop a bloodmobile with it.
This here, the governor of Georgia, Busby, was going to fly this plane because he's a pilot. But we closed down this whole town for this scene that's coming up right now, as you well remember. Landed the airplane.
Under the wires.
Yeah, I'm not gonna give it away, but there's not very many states or very many cities you could do this shot right here that we see right now. And the guy that flew this for me, I've known him for...
Look at this shot. Wow.
Yeah.
It was one of those VTOL things, right?
Yeah. Stole.
Stole, you know, yeah.
Short takeoff and landing or whatever. Look at him standing that thing on his nose trying to get it stopped.
That was a great stunt, huh?
Yeah, it was. You know, in this kind of a movie, you got to be ridiculous to hold the people's attention and to entertain them and everything else. And all this here, when we rehearsed this, Dom came in and we didn't think nothing of it. Then we turned the plane around in the real take and blew papers, as you saw, and things all over the damn store. And here we are taking off again. I mean, he had the throttle to the firewall on this thing, trying to get it up. And up he goes.
One of the things in this kind of movie, you can't do the stunts that have been done before. You just have to be creative and original almost in every stunt, the way you set it up. I've got to remember that.
Oh, this is so funny.
A nightmare.
A living nightmare.
Roger.
I knew Roger. You did, too, but I knew him because I was married to a lady at the time that threw quite a few Hollywood parties, so I'd been to a number of parties and had him over to the house a few times to some parties at our house. And you would think that he, being the superstar off of James Bond and everything, it'd be difficult. In my opinion, he was the ultimate professional.
Oh,
just never bitch, moan, raise hell about anything.
Star named Roger Moore, and for this I sent you to the best schools.
The other thing is, this ranch that we picked for his home.
Yeah.
Do you remember that Bert liked it so well he bought the damn thing?
Bought it himself.
He bought it, put a man and his wife in there to run it, so he'd have a retreat to go to and things if he went through Atlanta. I don't think he ever went to the damn house.
Never.
No.
Well, you know, the other thing about Roger Moore, we had to doctor the script because the E&O policy, we were so close to him playing James Bond, even in the Aston Martin, and the music got very close, that we had... He couldn't play Roger Moore, wanted to do James Bond, so we gave him the Seymour. What the hell is his name? Some ridiculous name.
Seymour was his...
In other words, he's a guy who thought he was Roger Moore, not a guy who thought he was James Bond.
Right.
Which is the only way we could get around it for the insurance policy.
Not only that, but we used within one note of the James Bond music of being sued, and later on, I had a meeting with Broccoli, to about maybe directing one of the Bond films, and when I walked in, the first thing he said is, I probably should sue you for a cannonball. I said, I think we managed to get around that.
I'll tell you what happened after this, Al. I think in the subsequent movies that Roger did with Broccoli, the Bond movies, he put a very restrictive clause in Roger's contract that he can't do anything that even spoofed.
Yeah.
James Bond as a result of this, because we came as close as you could legally without crossing the line.
Right.
With the Aston Martin with all the gimmicks on it and license plate flipping over and all that stuff.
You know, maybe it would have been better if you didn't pay so much attention to those girls.
Nobody's perfect.
That's true. Nobody's perfect. But him.
And you're going to see here in just a second, I always put myself in a movie.
As a handsome lug.
Well, I know talent when I see it, so I just put myself in. I just cast myself.
He couldn't put his girlfriend in the scene because we had seen her before.
Yeah.
You're a handsome
man.
Undoubtedly. Look, look at Bert when you're on the screen. Baby.
Yeah, absolutely.
Forget Dom. You make him funny.
This is where they get the idea to use the ambulance for the cannonball run.
Now, if you look closely at this, you will see the biggest Oriental star in the world in this movie, Jackie Chan. This was his first movie made in the United States.
All right, first English-speaking movie ever made.
Yeah, and the other chap with him is a guy named Michael Hoy, who at the time was regarded as the Chinese Charlie Chaplin.
Number one comedian in the Far East.
Yeah.
And Jackie Chan was the karate number one box office, which it says he really was.
And the other girl was just a friend of Needham's again.
No. I really knew when we started working with Jackie Chan, I knew he was going to be a star.
Going to make it. You know?
Yeah. I mean... First of all, he was, again, very professional. There's something about him
that you
have to like.
You like him,
You like him.
You know why? He is a sweet guy. Huh?
Yeah, he is. Absolutely.
He's a sweet guy in person.
Later on, when I went to Hong Kong to do another show, he went out of his way to show me the town and everything. He was just a super nice
guy. Very decent man.
And talented. I mean,
oh, God.
And his talents as an actor has grown immensely since this. This is his first shot.
Lefty mi cigarro.
Camel.
Santa Camel schmuck. Winston.
Who is this guy?
That handsome guy on the right.
Yeah, with the sunglasses on.
It's a great joke, too. Camel.
In case you don't know it, that was Mr. Ruddy.
Yes. And Rudy Durant.
Yeah.
Nobody knows at this moment except people in Hollywood. I'll tell you know something, Hal, when I would look at this movie? If you had this movie out today, it'd be just as successful. This exact movie.
Oh, I think so.
It's just as funny.
Well, because we went over the edge, you know, which you have to do.
It was absurd. Yeah. Well, the point, you know, is every character is so specific.
Yeah.
And so angular. There's no crossovers. You knew what everyone was going to do and everyone was going to say. I love being on the set with Jamie Farr. He was hysterical, wasn't he?
Yeah, he sure is.
And I suppose you still intend to go through that race with the infidel Americans?
The cannonball will fall to the pocket.
The cannonball. Blah.
My dear sister, I pledge it.
Oh God, this was funny stuff. This is something that was never done before.
Yeah,
bailing out of a plane and a motorcycle with a parachute.
A buddy of mine, it was a jumper, and as I used to be, and I told him what I want to do. I said, ride out the back of this plane on a motorcycle, and he said, okay. And I said, well, wait a minute, what if you get tangled up with that thing? He said, then that's my problem. He said, no, I'll push away, I'll be okay.
No, but first you have to ride out without a parachute.
No, I didn't go that far.
He said, let's do something really different.
No, I didn't go that far. There he goes.
That's a scream.
Well, I got to tell you something. That's kind of scary to be falling with that bike. If you don't get clear of it, you get your chute tangled in it or something, well, obviously you're going to die.
That was a great look. That's marvelous stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Boy, need something?
Oh, are you kidding? That is the dumbest thing I've seen since that dimwit tried to jump the Grand Canyon.
We were in Arizona for that, right?
Yeah, Arizona.
We were East Coast for what we called the Green Look.
Right.
So we shot the United States in two locations. We were in Atlanta, Georgia. And then we went to...
Nevada, went up around the Las Vegas area and California for the ending.
Yeah.
Three spots.
That's right.
This motel that they're getting ready to pull into and drive this car into the swimming pool, like right here, that's where we stayed.
It's the Hawaiian Tropic girls, remember that?
Oh, yeah, Hawaiian Tropic.
Ron's entourage.
Right. But the Hawaii,
I just got into it. This scene was so funny.
Yeah.
I was laughing, and Hal said, Ruddy, I can hear you. And he goes, whoa, whoa, whoa. He said, I can hear you laughing on the track. I was laughing so hard.
And you know what? Later, you and I tried to do, or did a pilot film with these guys, and the only reason the damn thing didn't sell was the head of the network got fired the weekend we took it in to show it to him. Remember
that?
That's very
true, yeah.
We went in on Friday, going to show it to him on Monday. He got fired on Sunday, so the new regime just said, forget it.
It had some of the funniest stuff I've ever seen in my life in that part. I remember it had Terry Bradshaw with the bag of wigs.
Yeah.
And he'd see it. Girl, he said, give me the Bob Redford. And he put on the blonde wig. And he had the Sean Connery wig.
Oh, anyway, the motel where this is being shot, the company stayed at that motel. And if you saw the marquee a while ago, it said Cannonball Pub. And they really did change it to the Cannonball Pub. But those people were just so excited about having us there. And they did little things like when we worked nights in the parking lot, they kept the bar open all night for us, and good things like that.
Well, the other thing that I must say, Hal's the only director I've ever seen that does this. Every night, he would run dailies for everybody, cast and crew, and we got food, and we got...
booze.
Food, and we go, and then he would lay out all the booze. I mean, scotch and vodka and beer and all soft drinks, and we'd sit there. And ostensibly, we would do this right after we got through shooting and then go have dinner. Except when most guys got through watching dailies after three shooters, they'd stumble into the room and go to sleep.
But we'd take the whole crew in there. But I tell you, Ruddy, it helped when you're in the editing room to remember. If that crew saw something in dailies and laughed at it, you'd say, wait a minute, they were out there busting their ass all day trying to get this done, and now they come in here and look at it and they're still laughing at it, then you got to know that it's pretty funny stuff.
True. I got to throw you a bone again, Hal. The other thing that Hal did and that I've never seen any other director do We'd start out in the morning and say, guys, this is the work for the day. When we get through this, we're not going to do anything else. We're going to go home. At this point, everybody on the crew, the makeup guy was helping the electricians. Everyone was crossing the lines. Some days we'd get through at 2, 3 o'clock. They'd all be back in the pool swimming.
I remember one day we got through about noon. And
yeah, I was bringing all the press people out. Yeah. You were rapping when I brought them. Yeah, it was a native. Everyone should sit down.
I had to go look at a location or something. When I got back to the motel, all the guys, the crew, were all out there with the Hawaiian Tropic girls in the swimming pool and everything. And I'd walk by and I'd say, you guys okay? And they'd say, fine, boss, just fine, you know. But, as you also remember, we had a wreck here one night. And when I say a wreck, we had a big crane with a bunch of lights hanging on it. And it fell over and mashed some cars and all that stuff. Hell, we just wrapped and went to the bar for the rest of the night. We hadn't even made a shot. And the next night we came in and did both nights' work in one night.
I mean, it was a beautifully run show, but, I mean, you really had those guys honed in, hell. I've never seen anyone run a crew as well as you do.
There's our cannonball. Well, you know, Reddy, I think a part of that is the fact that I was crew for so many years. You know, I mean, I was an extra and I was a stuntman, and so I knew all the crews.
You were a paratrooper, too, Needham, in hell.
But I knew what they wanted. They want to be treated decent. They want good food. And they want you to like them. I swear my crews would almost die for me.
No, there's no question about it. But you treated them well, huh?
Well, yeah.
You know, there was not, I'm the director and you're, you know, well, down there.
The one thing I do, whenever I went to a bar, any of my crew were in there, I never let them buy a drink. I mean, just to show that I cared about them.
Yeah, that's why he hired guys that didn't drink, but outside of that. <there's a problem. laughs> Teetotalers.
Yeah. No, my crew was known to have a toddy or
a few. It was, I must say, going to the dailies every night was something everyone looked forward to.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of fun because everybody would get a drink and we'd put up the first reel. And when the reel was over, everybody would go get another drink and put up another reel. By hell, by the fifth reel, everybody thought it was funny, you know?
They're laughing at everything. Yeah. Even scenes they've seen before.
You have to be very scientific about this. Could go up the nostrils, like the sinuses.
That's true.
There. Don't bother about the bill. Just give him a couple of enemas and call me in the morning.
This kid here that is mocking the press... You found him on a TV show or something, didn't you? He was out of New York. He was
George Frisch,
a street
yeah.
entertainer or something out of New York.
Oh, yeah. He was a big star on Broadway. Very funny, actually.
And here comes the nut.
Here comes the chief. The line that always cracks me up is the funniest line. It's funny how you remember certain things. We'll get to it later when he pulls into that 7-Eleven gas station and he sees this great chick.
Yeah.
He says, I'll be back. I'm coming back. Take a physical. George Firth, yeah, this guy's Martha Broadway, New York face.
You know what? I used him in Hooper, and he was the SPCA guy on the set. And he did something in that movie that just tickled the hell out of me. When he got in an argument with Bert, because Bert did a high fall with a dog in his arm or something. And when he got ready to leave, he took his hat off and hit Bert with it. I just thought it was funny as hell.
You know, actually, when you look at the movie again, it's bizarre. You know that five of these stars could have funded movies by themselves at that time.
Oh, yeah.
Roger, Bert, Farrah Fawcett was a major star.
Yeah.
Then I'm thinking Dean, Sammy, all the other guys. But it's funny, once the movie got going with Bert, a lot of guys
came on board.
Came on.
Yeah.
And I remember even in the second one, Frank Sinatra actually called Dean up and said, why don't guys ever ask me to come on? Remember?
Yes.
We never even thought of going to Sinatra. Well, he loved this movie so much. And Dean told him how much fun he had doing it.
We had Dean and Sammy. Then we had Shirley MacLaine.
He had the whole Rat Pack.
He had the Rat Pack. Here's our priest. But had the Rat Pack, so they, I think... Sinatra was saying, hey, let me go out and have a little fun with them.
With the guys.
And I never forget the first morning when that Sinatra was going to work. I always get to the set real early. And I got there, and I'd be damned if Sinatra wasn't already out of makeup. He'd been there.
Ready
out
to
of,
go.
Ready to go.
Yeah.
Ready to go.
Well, the thing is that the guy flew in early in the morning in his Learjet. Needham, he shot them all in and out in one day in, what, three scenes?
Yeah. you know something else? You cannot replace talent.
No.
I mean, there are so many people in this film that have so much talent.
No question.
George Furthier, I mean... Well, give him anything you want done, man.
Well, when you look at with Mel Tillis and Terry Bradshaw and Dean and Sammy and Bird and Farrah.
Yeah. And here's a pretty good pair right there, too.
Barbeau.
Oh, that would be very exciting.
This is a very funny scene.
But we're cannonballers ourselves, thank you.
They're cannonballers.
It's bizarre how well this movie holds up, you know that?
Yeah.
Just as funny today.
We made it pretty good while ago, but it's still...
It's still well, you know, the interesting thing is when you even look at the cars.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all...
The cars are contemporary cars today.
Sure.
You know, the Lambos
Lamborghinis and
the van,
Ferraris.
I mean,
and
you could do it today with the 308 and the Lamborghini and the van. There's that great musical cue. I remember that.
Hi.
Don't tell me your name. Let me guess. Melissa.
I'd say she's a pretty lady.
Yeah, beautiful. It certainly wasn't hard to work with.
Nah. I've never had a problem with an actor. Never have I had a problem with an actor. And I have a little theory that I go by. When I go into a room, I go in, I know already where I want the actors to sit, move, go, do, whatever. And I'll just say, okay, come on into the room and let's walk through it one time. And what I do is, instead of going up to them and say, all right, now I want you to walk over here and so on and so forth, I say, let me ask you, could you, when you come in the door, just move over here that way and I tell them what my camera angle is? You challenge them. And they accept it immediately just to show you that they can do it and everything. And I've never had a problem with, not one actor have I ever had a problem with. None.
You know, I do think part of it, how that I think frustrates actors and creates problems, is working for somebody who's not sure what they want to do.
And they do it 15 times.
Oh, God.
And the actors, what happens is your actors are worn out by the time the director finally says, print one.
That's true.
And for the people that don't know it, I very seldom shoot anything over three times, twice as...
Once for protection.
Yeah.
Max.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it takes a unique talent, Hal, to handle as many stars as you did in this piece. But you knew what you wanted from them, and you were very specific in what you asked, and they were happy to do it.
Well... It's not brain surgery, you know.
Well, it doesn't have to be
I have to do is set the camera, and I got a director of photography to help me do that. And when you got this much talent, really all you have to do is say action, print, cut, let's move to the next shot.
You make it sound so easy. A lot of morons out there saying, well, why? I'm going to be a director.
Well,
this man
they probably could.
This man has worked in the business for years. And has been on 1,000 sets and done hundreds and hundreds of hours of film. And, oh, sure, it's seemingly easy to Hal Needham because he's done it so many times. He understands what has to be done. And I think that sense of that attack on the scene that he says, well, just put the camera here, Michael, is something that is distilled through years of experience. And believe me, hell, I've been on sets with other directors. You see how much hair I don't have anymore? You start tearing some of it up in the back. I've actually stopped some directors. Said, what the hell are we doing here? You don't need this shot, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
You know?
So well, you know what? I've done 310 movies, either as a stuntman, an actor, or a director. I've done 4,500 television shows. I have to have learned something. Or be
even between
biggest,
drinks.
Yeah, or be the biggest idiot in the world. I mean, with all that time on the set, and I have worked for directors, especially doing stunts, that had no idea where the camera should be or how it was to be accomplished or anything else. And so from them, I learned, I think, what not to do.
Mm. It's true. Was Dean Martin one of the joys on this movie?
Yes, he was.
He was kind to everybody.
Well, you know, what's another thing that's kind of strange is a lot of actors that I doubled when I was a stuntman. And
John Wayne.
Dean Martin being one of them.
In the Western, what was that he did? The one with
Something
Wayne.
Big.
Yeah.
No.
He did one with John Wayne. The Western. Remember, he was.
Yeah, and I didn't.
Was that El Dorado? I keep forgetting which one.
I forget which one it was, but I didn't do that one. First time I doubled him was on Something Big. You can see we weren't afraid to put a few stunts in this movie.
Now you will notice how close we come to the James Bond theme here.
So well, we came one note away from being sued.
Yeah.
This lady here, I have no idea who she is. She was just a local from Atlanta, Georgia. But I guarantee you, when I saw her, I said, this is the lady to walk up with Roger Moore. And she
I can understand why, and looking back at it now. That's your secretary.
That's my secretary on the right,
Kathy
and that's
Shea.
Brock Yates, the writer's wife, on the left.
Hold still, Petey. Hey,
that little boy was me when we saw it.
The little boy what?
Was me at the time. I was a kid when we made this movie.
Oh.
Keep the media coverage to a minimum. Thank you.
You heard a hell of...
Oh, God, I forgot he was even in the movie. Let's find a little... And that son of a bitch was strong. I want to tell you something. I used him in Smokey. Smokey 2, I used him. Where he wrecks Gleason's car. I can tell you something. If you had the money that we had lined up on this parking lot in automobiles, you wouldn't have to work for a while, Reddy.
Believe you me, it was true.
And earlier I was saying that we had an accident. Where the crane fell over.
Yeah.
The crane fell over and mashed a Ferrari boxer, from its normal height to about 8 inches off the floor. The guy that owned it was up in the pub having a drink, and they told him, he come down there, I thought he was going to have a heart attack.
Well, if you notice here, that's Budweiser beer that's being loaded. We were actually one of the first movies, I think, that exploited product tie-in to the extent we did,
yep.
And we generated about $2.5-3 million in co-op ads with 7-Eleven with the Slurpee cups.
Yeah,
I mean, we had a number of advertisers
were glad to get on board.
Yeah, Goodyear Tire. We had a lot of guys.
This is Brock Yates. He's a guy that he's the nut that really ran the original Cannonballs, and he's the nut that I drove the ambulance with. And
he still writes now for Car and Driver.
Or Car and Driver, and he does a lot of... look at this cast. Look at that cast. He writes for Car and Driver, and he's an announcer for television, for auto racing and things like that. He knows what he's talking about.
He also has something he's original. I think the Cannonball run... I think they stopped it.
Well, he stopped it. Yeah.
He stopped it because...
Now he has a thing called One Lap of America.
Yeah, which is really more of
It's a rally. I mean, when we ran the Cannonball, I mean, that damn ambulance run 145, and when I was driving, that's what we were doing, 145.
It's not politically correct, I think.
No, but it was fun.
It was fun.
Well, you know, something strange, though, they figured out the statistics. They had run the cannonball so many times, and they figured out the miles and the average speed and everything. And the average speed's up around, we average 94 miles an hour. Average 94 miles an hour. That's stopping to get gas and everything. But the average speed for all the cannonballs was something like 80 miles an hour, and they've never had an accident. Never had
an accident. How many cannonballs? I know Dan Gurney won one and a Ferrari won.
Gurney and Brock Yates won the first one. You know, I don't remember who won the rest of them.
But there weren't that many. I don't think it's only...
They ran five.
There were five?
Yeah. The last one they ran was when Brock and I and the Mad Doctor and his wife run the ambulance. Because if I'm not mistaken, Ruddy, didn't we write a clause in there saying that he couldn't run it anymore, that we were afraid of the legalities of it and things?
I think there was some restriction put on it. But I think he'd have a hard time. The Cannonball Run itself was never had any... It was always under the table. It was
It wasn't sanctioned
by anyone, and no one really knew outside of a handful of nuts.
I'll tell you what.
That was going on.
The Ohio police knew. Boy, Ohio.
You were coming through?
Well, yeah, boy, they were tough. They got one guy five times in Ohio.
Ohio?
Yeah. They got so they knew him by his first name. They said, okay, George, come on. You know.
That's funny.
These guys were really great, and the stuff we did with the little cars.
Oh, launching the Subaru?
Funny. Yeah.
Well, the other thing that's worth mentioning here, and again, it goes back to Hal. In order to do a movie with this many stars, a lot of these stars only work 2 days, 3 days. We needed everyone at the beginning and everybody at the end, and in between, they would do their bit. Now, the point is when a star would show up and you know he's going to be there Tuesday for 2 days, you better be ready to shoot him and not be behind schedule. So when you're working with someone like Hal, there was never a problem. And we facilitated these stars because you kept to that schedule.
Yeah.
And a guy'd show up in the morning, you'd start shooting him, and he'd be gone. That's how you can get all these stars.
Yeah, because you can't afford to have this many stars hang around for the full length of the movie. I don't know what Roger worked in there, but I don't believe he worked over a week, did he?
No, he worked about a week and a half.
I think Dean and Sammy might have worked a little bit more.
But still, there was basically the beginning, the end, and you probably used them for like a week in between.
Yeah. Now, Terry and Mel, they worked pretty much all the way through it. But I'm talking about the super big stars.
You consider Bird worked 4 weeks, so how much, you know, I mean, how many days did we shot? What, 35, 36 days, right?
Yeah, right.
So no one worked too long.
No.
But, I mean, it was the way that you could facilitate getting that many stars in one movie.
Not only that, but we made three major moves. And when I say moves, I'm talking about moving the whole company.
Company moves.
Driving the trucks from Atlanta, Georgia to Las Vegas.
And then down
and then
Tucson,
from Las Vegas to L.A. And then we had to move back to Las Vegas,
right,
if you remember. So we made three major moves, and that's a lot to do in a...
For a major company move?
Yeah.
We are going right down there and bring this thing to a screeching halt right now. Buckle up. We're going into action.
Would you mind? Very simple. Might be easier with your lights on.
Roger would, on many occasions at night, sit around, and he was quite a raconteur. You know, he'd tell you marvelous story. And truly one of the funny, forget being a nice guy, which he is, but very, very funny when he started having a few drinks and loosening him up.
Well, you know what? At the Cannonball Pub upstairs in the motel where we're, it wasn't unusual to see the whole damn cast up there. And they'd take turns at singing and entertaining and everything. It really got to be the local hangout, because everybody's going, oh, Christ, I get to see all these stars, and they come up there at night. It was a fun place. And these two nuts, the two guys on the motorcycle, that when we ran the race, the Cannonball, what Brock and I did, we gave everybody a tape recorder and a pen and pencil and said, write down anything you think is going to be funny and so on and so forth. So a lot of these characters, like the priest and the two guys on the motorcycle, those things really happened in the real Cannonball Run, and they do anything. One guy had a sign on his car or identification or something saying that he was delivering body parts for transplants.
I mean, you must admit, Jack, in the scene coming with Jackie Allen was one of the funniest cuts when you
open the door.
I got someone to see him come out.
When
terrifying.
When he opens that door.
Oh, you're screaming. And she sees him too. He says, I'm a proctologist.
Yeah. I'd worked with, doing many, many westerns, I'd worked with Elam a number of times, and I know how funny he is, on and off the screen, and I just knew he'd be hilarious.
Especially and actually, one of the brightest men, I forget, he was like
an accountant.
He was an accountant.
And the reason his doctor said, if you don't quit, you're going to go blind.
Yeah.
He quit being an accountant and became
that's logical.
An actor, yeah.
The one thing you were always warned with Jack Elam is don't ever play liar's poker with him.
Oh, no.
He or made a fortune doing westerns with John Wayne because he was an accountant. He knows numbers. Yeah. And you wanted to stay away from him in any kind of
here's car. Here's the scene.
Yeah.
This is Jack Elam's interview.
This is what I found for you. And it had a real musical sting, boy. he's spitting his hand, yeah. God,
oh, God. He breaks me up, man.
Yeah.
You may be a little overqualified.
I never realized he could do comedy.
Oh.
I never saw him do any comedy until he worked on this thing.
Oh, he is funny.
He's outrageous.
Yeah. Christ.
You know, I swear to God, Hal, I don't know how you could almost take this script and shoot it.
Go ahead and get a new cast and reshoot it. I don't know if I'd want a new cast.
No, I know. But I mean, it is outrageously funny.
I know.
I've determined that my services will require the payment of $2,000.
The characters are off the wall.
Along the lines of $200. Fortunately,
he thinks he'll take it.
I'll check my calendar.
My schedule, I find I'll be able to make the journey as far as the money's concerned.
The doctor that I took from UCLA, he said, that's who you picked to portray me. He was a little upset.
You ought to start paying for your treatment after that, right?
Yeah.
Well, here we come, right back where we started from.
Thank you, Victor.
Bowers.
We do not have a female patient.
When we ran the real Cannonball, Brock and I did all the driving, and the doc and his wife is in the back. Later on, there's going to be a scene, and I'll tell you about it when we get there. But when I drive, I guess Brock figured he had his life and his wife in the car. And we were averaging about 80, 85 miles an hour.
Smoking it.
When I'd get behind the wheel, we'd average 104, 105. One time, I came to a little detour. It was a two-lane road in Pennsylvania, and it came on us so fast. Well, it came on us at 145 miles an hour, and it was nighttime, and there was a detour, and I made a little bit of a left turn and followed the detour, and it was, I had that van completely sideways at about 140 miles an hour, and I straightened it back up and kind of, I never picked up, never lifted off the accelerator, and went on down and kind of did the same thing, getting back onto the regular highway, and nobody said one word. I mean, everybody,
petrified,
everybody was petrified. Nobody said anything.
Well, did you have heavy sprains? Well, you must have done suspension.
Had, had a super electronic suspension system on it. That van cost me about $60,000.
In those days?
Yeah.
Well, you must have had a great suspension because
that
van isn't exactly, doesn't handle like a Ferrari
nature. I don't know. I gave that to the chapel of the NASCAR the NASCAR chapel, and from the auction off, and they auctioned off, raised quite a lot of money for the church, and some guy in Asheville, North Carolina or something has a real hot ambulance, I can assure you.
Now, all these scenes in the van that you're going to see is what Needham calls poor man's process. I don't think anyone does this today, but it's amazing how real. And we did this downstairs in one of the, subterranean garage?
In a garage.
Dark and just moving, shaking the car a little. But you can't get it any better than this, huh?
My God, the perfect specimen.
Examination.
AJ, you want me to start the examination right away? I don't like this job.
Oh,
right here.
God.
No, thank you. Not right now.
We put a little high tech in it that really didn't exist
in those days.
Today it does, but it didn't then.
That's true. That was Cadillac sound. Yeah. You get night vision one.
And a little stealth.
It was a running gag with the girls in the car.
Yeah. One of them's always going to choose to unzip her blouse a little bit. And it's amazing also, this guy you see right here, this cop, was Bert's stand-in on the movie. We give him a part. Earlier you saw a guy at the bar who was our accountant for the movie.
Oh, John. That's
John.
Right.
I mean, we put everybody in this damn thing. You and I and John and this kid. And
throw the bodies in.
Yeah.
Let me see your driver's license, please.
Oh, here comes the the license.
Well, I got to say that if I was a cop, I think I'd let him go.
A little indiscretion. The whole road packed with speed crazy lunatics.
It's still a tasteful movie, you know.
And it's got a payoff to it.
I mean, the movie never got sleazy.
No.
It always was a good natured breeze, you know.
Take care. Keep it in the road.
You know, when Brock Yates started the Cannonball, he and two or three of his drinking buddies were in a bar in Connecticut, and they decided to do this thing. And there's five of them supposed to show up, and only two of them showed. So they said, hell, we'll just run it anyway. So they did. Because he did a newspaper called the Cannonball Run.
Oh, Brock did?
Brock did, yeah. And he still does. So he advertised the next year in there and said, we're going to run this race and everything. So they had like 10, 12 next time. And then they had about 15, 18 next time. Then we ran the big one. And when he put the word out in the paper, we had 46 different vehicles in this thing. I mean, whatever you can think of, that's what we had in there, including the motorcycle with the two guys on it.
Really?
And what I'm dressed as a bride and all that kind of stuff.
How many of these cars showed up at the end? How many cars made it to California?
How many made
it? 46 that started.
All but one.
Really?
Yeah, he had a blown engine or something. So we had a big party down there in Long Beach at the hotel when we got through. And, boy, you're talking about a beat crowd. Man, you go straight through. I mean, there's no stopping. And not only that, but I got up on Saturday morning early, and we didn't leave until 11:30 that night. Then we drove, and it took us 32 hours to get here, so we'd been up for a long time. And
then would you sleep in the back while somebody else drove?
No, never shut my eyes.
JJ?
No, thanks.
Victor?
See this scene right here? This came right out of the real run. I was running 145 miles an hour. I look in my mirror, and we're in Pennsylvania somewhere, and I look in my mirror, and I see some headlights way back, and we hadn't passed anybody.
Do you have radar detectors in those days?
Oh, yeah, fuzzbusters, yeah. But we were way back. I saw this light way back, and I said, Brock, I said, it's got to be the cops. So I slowed down to about 80, 85, something like that, and they started gaining on us. They weren't gaining on us at first. They started gaining on us. When they got there, they turned their lights on. I pulled over, and he's got out, And here's the ambulance. That's what it looked like. That is the car we used.
Exact car, yeah.
And he and I were dressed in the same uniforms that they got on. And these two cops said, "What are you doing, son?" And I said, "Well, I got a patient. I'm going, taking them in." He said, "Well, where are you heading?" I said, "California." He said, "California? We're in Pennsylvania." And he said, "Why didn't you fly her?" I said, "I have no idea." I said, "You'll have to ask the doc." So I took him around. Of course, the doc wasn't Jack Elam. But anyway, they went around, opened the door. We had her, his wife, Pam, laying out there on a gurney with IV needles in her arm, or supposedly in her arm. And this cop said, "What's wrong with her?" And he just reached and got a UCLA medical thing and held a sheet and held it up to show the cop. And the cop says, "Well, what's wrong with her?" And he says, "It's a lung disease." He says, "Obviously, you don't know medicine." He said, "It's so bad." He said, "We not only couldn't fly her, we couldn't even take the northern route. We have to go to the south." And when those scouts didn't say anything, we were running on intimidation. In
sure.
other words, we're saying, we hope the red lights and the ambulance gets us through. And having the doc on board didn't hurt anything. And these guys said, "Okay, because see, if they stop us and something happens to that patient, they could be in trouble."
Oh, sure.
So,
well, the whole thing is so outrageous. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, what are they going to say? We don't believe the doc?
Right.
Take those needles out of the arm. We're taking these girls in.
Right. So anyway, they turned us loose. They said, "Okay, but slow this damn thing down and turn those red lights off." And I said, "But wait a minute. I always run with red lights." He said, "Not in this state." And I said, "You got it. Okay. And we got that. And what I wanted to do was go back and try to find those two cops and get them to play the parts.
Oh, that would
but
be
I thought,
funny.
Nah, I better not push my luck, you know.
That's hysterical.
Yeah, it was fun. We had so much fun. Later on, when we was going through Kansas, and it was on a Sunday afternoon, 3 or 4 o'clock, something like that, as best I remember. And there was a rodeo, and again, we're on the CB, and we know what's coming up and everything, and the traffic started getting heavy and everything, and I said, "Brock, we got to get through this thing." So we got on the CB and started saying, "We're a meat wagon, we're coming through," and we had the red lights on and all that kind of stuff, and there was, traffic was everywhere, and there was a cop in the middle of the street, and he's directing traffic. When he sees us coming, he stops everybody and just waves us through, and I said, "This ain't fair." I mean, you know. We really...
Well, so how'd you guys do in the race finally, Dana?
Well, to tell you the truth, we were out. We broke down in Palm Springs. We lost the transmission.
Kidding.
We lost the transmission and had to put it on. A guy came by with a big semi, a flatbed, and I paid him to load this thing up and bring us on into Long Beach. Well, we had it won. Because we was averaging 96 miles.
It's such
miles.
A great idea, too.
Yeah, we had it won.
Well, did you get any speeding tickets at all?
No. That's the only time we got stopped was in Pennsylvania by those.
Great disguise.
Yeah, here's where we almost got sued by Broccoli for taking all of his ideas, which are coming up here pretty soon.
Please go ahead, they're your lungs. Well,
I'm sure the audience is alert enough to know that every time you see Roger Moore, he's got a new girlfriend in the car.
No, of course not.
Well, then I drifted into playing a rather popular character on a television series. It's still in syndication, you know. Half away.
Thanks a lot, ladies. But I would take it a little easier, some of the officers up.
And every time we see these two, they got a new cop that they're
playing
tantalizing.
The same guy. Well, it did have a great payoff with the girls, which you see
absolutely.
Coming out.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that was something Hal did in all of his movies, you will notice, whenever a cop car went out of control, he always resolved it by showing cops never getting killed or hurt.
Yeah.
They always got up with a befuddled look, but the race went on.
You know, we didn't no mayhem in this film. I mean, obviously, we're stretching the law a little bit by speeding and things, but we never... You know,
no one
said,
ever got hurt.
Nobody got hurt.
Yeah.
Laid a finger on me.
No, no, I just gave her a little prick. With this.
Hey, Super Chief, will you lean forward so I can get the front wheel on the ground? Stop kidding, I am.
Here's the Wheelie King. Obviously, this is not the actors on there. That's a stuntman, a couple of stuntmen on the bike. But this guy could wheelie that motorcycle as far as you want him to go. He could go a mile or two or whatever. Just throw it on the back wheel and down the road he'd go.
We want to give you our blessings.
Dean, was this 308 Ferrari yours? Like if you had
that was mine, yeah. What I did was by putting
Dean and Sammy
in that car, we had to take the car and the ambulance, all the actors' car, we had to take them with us on the car carriers. So I said, oh, this is fine. I'll put them in my car. That way, at night, I'd have something to drive. So I carried my car with me all the way.
Oklahoma! We want to bless you!
Talking about, he said, there's no black priest, and he said, there is. This is funny stuff.
I remember one time we were thinking of doing a scene with Dean and Sammy going through a southern town, the Ku Klux Klan. And Bird following him. Bird said, hey, guys.
We're pushing it.
We're pushing it. That's my crowd. That's my audience. Let's forget it.
Couldn't hurt.
I say.
I got to tell you, that little Ford run pretty good, too.
It's expensive to operate. I remember some of the bills you were getting.
Oh, yeah, to maintain it?
To maintain it.
Oh, yeah, it's $1,600 just for a tune-up, for Christ's sake.
I was in your office once when it was in Hollywood Sports Cars.
Yeah.
And Kathy came and told you how much it was to tune it up. Like,
and you picked me off the floor.
Yeah.
I had this car. Again, this has nothing to do with the movie, but I owned the rocket car that first broke the sound barrier, the Budweiser rocket. My secretary had my mother in her car, and they were going out there to the desert where we was running Edwards Air Force Base, and I went by them doing probably 110, 50 miles an hour, and 4 miles down the road, highway patrol got me. Now, while he's talking to me, they go on by, and when I got there, they said, ah, you got a ticket, that'll teach you, and I said, no. What happened was the cop, I showed him my license, and he said, how's the car running? And I said, how's the car running? And I said, hell, you were chasing me, you know. He said, no, I don't mean this one. How's the rocket car running? And I said,
really?
Oh, I said, well, we're getting close to breaking the sound barrier, we think. And he said, well, do yourself a favor. Don't break it in this little red Ferrari and get on out of here. And didn't write me a ticket, you know. Let me go.
Ooh, JJ, we got a
flat.
Yeah, and those priests
weren't fathers. They were
mothers.
Come here.
Oh, gee.
So there you have it. A rather simple story, actually. International film star.
Well, here we are with Roger with a new girlfriend. One thing I do know how to shoot, and that's action. And in here, you're getting ready to see something here. I was the first guy to bring rockets, and I'm talking about hydrogen peroxide rockets, into the picture business. And you're getting ready to see a scene where I put a hydrogen peroxide rocket on the back of a police car and set it at 45 degrees to the way he was going. And when he hit the button, things got 25,000 horsepower, the rocket does. Will you see what it does to this car? It's
we had one on the Subaru when you launched it, and remember with the guys?
Oh, yeah.
With
yeah,
Jackie and
right.
Michael.
I did. Yeah, we launched it down into the water.
Yeah. You got to remind me to tell, if we have a little time here, with what you had done. We were trying to develop Megaforce with Bill and his rocket.
Okay.
When he came by the studio,
burned
the goddamn studio down. Jesus Christ.
Here's another scene where we take advantage of Slurpees or whatever it is they sell to get
little tie-ins.
How much did 7-Eleven put into the ad budget on this thing?
7-Eleven put it on the Slurpee cups, and they spent about $500,000.
But they had something like 25 million Slurpee cups, and they ran out because they had the picture of the stars on them.
The stars on the cup.
And now that, then they contributed some cash to the
advertising
program.
At the end, yeah.
But what we did was we showed people that 7-Eleven sells gasoline, and a lot of people didn't even think of it. There's a wheelie expert again. But people didn't even know it. So they wanted to show that they sold gasoline. And we thought while we were there, we'd advertise a little Slurpee. I told Dom and Bert, I said, dream up something here to work this in so we'll bring a little attention to it. And wait till I get in the car. I mean, Dom DeLuise is a pro at this.
Well, look at the Budweiser. Remember when the plane lands in town and he gets the beer? He hugs Wayne. You say, Budweiser, you've said it all.
He's got the Budweiser and he's got a Slurpee. Oh, Christ. Well, let's show him how we can dupe him sometime. This is the same cop that stopped the two girls a little earlier in the movie, and I'll bet you if we didn't tell them, they wouldn't have known it.
No. You know why?
A lot of cops
look like
that. Yeah. Yeah, but you're a different state, different time. A lot of things have happened.
If audiences like what they see,
that's all that counts.
It goes along with it.
You know what? I hear producers and directors and people argue over a little cut here, a little cut there. And you're right. If people are enjoying the film, you can do almost anything you want to. And
they don't
pay any attention to it. We in Hollywood get carried away with our own
matching shots.
Matching, it's got to be perfect and all that kind of stuff. And if it's good entertaining, they don't care.
Absolutely not.
He's sicking them on
Dean and Sammy.
Dean and Sammy, yeah.
The thing is that this movie had so much energy.
Yeah.
That you, even if you had any goofs, and I don't think we did actually.
I don't remember any, but
you would never have noticed it anyhow because it was moving at such a clip.
Let me tell you something. Burt Reynolds is the only actor I know that can turn and react directly into the lens.
Yeah, true. He's totally comfortable with it.
Yeah, he's comfortable with it, and the audience accepts it. I mean, he's saying, aren't we having fun?
Yeah,
and you know,
that's true.
That's what's in his eye.
That's true.
And he's saying, aren't we having fun? And the audience accepts it. And the first time I did that was in Smokey 1. I had him look directly in the camera and kind of raise his eyebrow and pull away after he'd snookered a cop. So from there, I learned that I could get away with it.
It's
him.
True, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Audiences loved it.
You, Shorty.
Now, Sammy Davis was truly one of, forget being the nicest, probably one of the most talented people.
Oh, yeah.
I ever met in my life.
He could do it all.
Oh.
He could do it all.
He went to Canforce 1 year when Roger couldn't go. He went to help sell the movie. He was a real pro, Sammy. And of course, Sammy loved the movie.
Oh, yeah.
He had such a good time.
And you know,
actually, it was one of the, ironically, it shows you how Hollywood didn't appreciate a lot of this talent. This is one of the biggest parts Sammy's ever done in the movie. You know?
I know it, yeah. Well, I mean, he
was in Ocean's 11, he was a couple other, but he was a major star in this movie. Yeah. You know?
And did it very well.
Yeah.
The one thing I did was I formed a bond between myself and truckers across the United States with
Smokey.
Well, with Smokey, and then with Smokey 2,
Hooper,
and Hooper, and this one. I mean, I really give them made the truckers look like they're good guys.
And they really helped you on the movie.
Oh. When I did Smokey 2, I must have had 40 or 50 trucks out there. And what I did was put an ad in the paper, and all the freelance truckers and everything to come in if they wanted to be in the movie. I had so damn many trucks out there, I didn't know what to do with them. And I think all we did was supply their gasoline and things, and they just... And here was the good part about it. I had so many that if a guy wanted to come in and work a day and leave, that was all right,
because
I wouldn't miss him anyway. I had so many, I didn't know what to do with all of them.
Quiet, Victor. You're going to blow our cover.
JJ, this is not a 9-to-5 job. I wish you could...
Remember, Dom actually was, I think, the only star who stayed with us at that our motel I mean, Bert and everyone else stayed at the fancy hotel, you remember?
Yeah.
In Tucson?
Oh, yeah, 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 in Tucson.
They stayed
right.
at, yeah, I forget
and
the
And he stayed over with,
he
with
stayed
us
with
and
us.
The crew.
Yeah, and the crew. Like, well, hanging around with the guys.
You know, talking earlier about how I get along with the crew, the one thing I always do is I never stay anywhere but where I put my crew. And the one lady I was married to in my life, she said, well, we can't stay here. And I said, I always stay with my crew. She says, I've never stayed with the crew. And I said, well, this is where we're staying this time. And they appreciate that fact. They know
true.
That
you're one of the guys.
I'm one of them. I'm not. I don't get some big fancy hotel.
No,
because
there was an elegant hotel in Tucson where Bert and the guys
yeah.
stayed.
Yeah.
With you know, like a little private cottage.
But being you and I, we stayed right down there with the crew.
With the guys, baby.
Well, yeah.
By the
like
time
it.
You got through looking at dailies, you didn't want to drive back to a hotel.
Couldn't.
I guess so.
My father used to work in a coal mine, so. 43 years.
Oh, God.
Who's your history?
We did. I don't know if people know or not, but you and I have done quite a few movies together. We did Cannonball 2, and Bert and Shirley MacLaine decided that they wanted to have this meaningful scene along the side of the road in the middle of a race. And I said, Bert, that doesn't make any sense. He said, oh, yeah, it needs to be in there. Well, I said, okay. So I picked a time, 4 o'clock in the morning or something, when the sun was coming up and everything. And I told my cameras, I had 3 cameras, and I told all of them, I said, when this shot's over, I want you to tell me just this most gorgeous, beautiful thing you've ever seen. Because I said, it's never going to be in the goddamn film anyway. But you have to do that
sure.
to pacify them and keep them happy.
Keep
otherwise, they're going to blow up on you.
You know, I remember that looking at it when we were in Arizona. It must have been 105 degrees. And we remember the crew was taking salt tablets.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, when they brought the chimpanzee out.
Oh,
he was in a wheelchair with an umbrella and wet towels around him, and we're all fainting on the road. It was so goddamn hot.
Come on, guys, keep moving, will you, please?
Another hero trucker. What is this ball player thing?
He was on the Jets at the time.
A lineman on the Jets, and I can't remember his name, damn it.
Yeah, he was huge.
The arms on him.
Think you're so big. Hey, does some of you people want to come over and push this thing out of the way? Come on. I'll put it in.
Actually, George was not only an actor, he was a very famous playwright. You know, he had one or two top plays he had written.
I just can't think of anything else to do, blow up something.
I'll tell you what, you didn't waste a lot of time on this movie. When you look, it is literally wall to wall.
And it's moving.
Moving. Action. When it stops, it's funny.
Hey, George, you remember the good old days before they got radar in? We used to chase speeders.
Yeah, this is really boring.
It's definitely not Star Wars time, but it was ahead of its time at the moment.
Sayonara! Bye-bye! What the hell was that?
Oh, yeah, they're stealth. We had that before the F-17 or whatever it is, right?
That's true. Stealth.
Oh, here comes the scene you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Where the girl comes
get
out.
Get a physical. I'll come back and get you.
When I called you, I was doing 149.
And he backs the car. He stops again. He thinks about it. The crack Jamie was...
Look, how much?
$6.75.
Here, my desert blossom. Give the change.
You know what I'm trying to remember, Hal, is how much of this stuff the guys improvised in some of these scenes.
Oh, a lot of it.
A lot, yeah.
A lot of it.
I mean, the guys got so into their characters that they says to get a physical. Yeah, there was a lot of improv because everyone's having fun doing it.
When you got this kind of talent,
yeah,
if you make them stick with the script, it's going to fall on its ass.
It's true. It's
Turn them loose, let them go. I mean,
that's true. If it doesn't work, you don't put it in the film.
I'm talking about films that have nothing to do with this, but it's like Smokey and the Bandit. If you think we wrote every word that Jackie Gleason said, you're crazy.
It's a gift. Well, then with Dean and Sammy, too.
Dean and Sammy, Bert and Dom.
Bert and Dom.
And they come up with stuff that's a hell of a lot better than in a script. I mean, majority of the time.
No question about it. Figure Dean and Sammy had routines they worked out years ago.
Yeah, right.
One day I was in the schoolyard. Nine guys were beating me up pretty good. There he was. Dun,
dun, dun. See, he's telling how chaos became chaos. And when you listen to him, you can visualize and actually see because he believes it himself.
Oh, you know. But the other nice thing that happens here, and Bert does it well too, when they're not, I mean, there's a very sweet side to these
Absolutely.
Guys that's vulnerable. You actually feel, you know, you like Dom. You understand he was nobody until chaos showed up. And how it gave him another alter ego. But it was a very sweet scene, actually.
Yeah,
you know?
And she was very receptive to the scene and understood all of it. And again, we shot this poor man process in the basement of the garage.
In the basement with the hose, yeah.
Yeah, with the hose going over the windshield.
And you couldn't do it any better.
No.
Look at these close shots. Oh, this is going to be the launch? I'm going to tell them the story about Bill with his hydrogen rocket when we see this. Burning in the studio down.
Masaiko!
Oh, this is the cop, right?
Yeah.
This one.
This was the payoff to this whole game.
Yeah.
It was
extreme.
Now, again, this is another star who came by for one day's work.
For this one.
For the one gag, yeah.
Now, she was a friend of my wife's, but I didn't know her before this here. And she was so concerned about coming out on the set and things and whatever for the one little shtick that she did. But
I think she was a star. She had done Lenny, with Dustin.
Yeah.
It was a major star in those days.
Now, here's where if I'm not mistaken, this is where we put our rocket car to use. Our rocket on the back of the police car.
Oh, to spin it around.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to put out a little smoke screen. Then the oil slick, I believe.
And you wonder why Broccoli was unhappy.
And there's the oil slick. Look at that car. Can you believe that thing?
And the guys get out at the end, because you always did that.
Yeah, but you know something? This guy, when he got out, he said, Jesus.
Never again.
Give me a few minutes. Let me unwind the world.
Good sport, isn't it? Would you mind rolling the window down, old girl? We're getting done up like a couple of kippers here.
Next time I bring my man.
Roger, again, can take a scene like this and make a bunch out of it when there's really not a hell of a lot
going on. You know, why? Because he can play. Roger plays against it a lot, which is hysterical.
Yeah. He's playing James Bond.
Yeah,
you know,
it's just
the
upper class Englishman. Yeah.
Right in the green door.
Oh,
Well, we went as far as we could with that cut.
On the frame.
Without getting in there.
I actually forgot that. That was hysterical.
Yeah.
And hearing him in the screaming chair, I think it's outrageous. We didn't put the subtitles in on that.
I've never seen a damn Rolls Royce that do 140 miles an hour.
What do you fellas got in
there? See the cop here on the left, the highway patrolman, and we're both the highway patrolman.
You see the hair? Look at the hair on that cop.
What?
You want to talk about things you get away with? Look at that.
Because they're announcers for television for the auto racing, and they're buddies of mine, so I put them in there.
No, but look.
And I know, but they said we can't cut our hair for one scene. And I said, all right, so don't cut it. Who gives a damn? You know.
This is Nevada at this point.
Yeah, right.
You can be any kind of cop now. It doesn't matter.
This is for you and the judge. Goddamn camel jockey.
Got a smoky on our tail.
Remember that kid? He was funny. It was Alfie Wise. Yeah. I forget that kid's name.
Officer, we got no brakes. No brakes. Help us. Yes, thank you.
Damn, no brake gag works every time.
Oh, no. We really don't have any brakes.
Kid, will ya?
Hang on!
We tore up a lot of cars, you know that?
That was a damn good stunt, too. I was nervous that day, boy. The train was going by one way. And you're like, bring that damn thing down, man. Smoke it.
It's got to be exact.
Right on the moment.
You know what? I forgot what our... there's our Wheelie King. I forgot what our stunt budget was on here, but it had to be
It was
sizable.
Substantial.
Huh?
Substantial, it was.
Yeah.
But, you know, I was telling the guys... that even with Bird thrown in, it's still relatively a modest budget movie for those days.
Yeah,
I think it was, $16 million. With Bird getting five.
Well, I thought it was a little more than that, but somewhere in that neighborhood.
Yeah.
And considering what all we got, I mean...
Hell, you shot the movie in 35, 36 days.
Yeah.
Bottom line. I think this is where they do the rock in it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where they do the rocket.
This little Subaru four-wheel drive they gave us.
Again, we put our rocket genius into this. By the way, the rocket genius is a guy named Bill Frederick who built a hydrogen peroxide rockets. And Ruddy and I were doing a film with him, and he had these little small rockets that were going to mount on these motorcycles and things. So he brought over the studio to show us how it would work. And I told him, I said, well, I just fired into the side of the soundstage there. He did.
First of all, the security guy took us to the back of the lot.
Right.
And this guy's got one of these hydrogen rockets. You're kind of looking at it now. And he gave us all both earmuffs. And he went, two, and hit this button. And this thing took off. We didn't even see it. I didn't know where the hell it went. I said, God, that's fantastic. Now we start looking for this rocket across the studio. And as we drive up to stage 10, in the middle of the zero is a hole. They were shooting Pennies from Heaven with Steve Martin. I figured someone got killed for sure. We ran in the stage, and no one was in it. We looked around. We didn't see anything, so we went back. We were relieved for about an hour. Until we start hearing helicopters and fire engines coming into the studio.
I looked out the window and I said, damn, Ruddy, I said, those engines are going back to where we were working. Well, what happened was the damn rocket went into the soundstage and through the wall, got hung in the middle and was still burning, set the damn soundstage on
burned
fire.
Burned the soundstage. It got stuck in the netting and the padding.
Yeah.
And we sat there as the guy was calling us up. What happened for the month after that, every time we came on the lot or left, he insisted on looking at our truck.
Wouldn't know what we was carrying on the lot.
Thank God he had insurance. I think it was an $80,000 bill or something.
I think so. Well, they took the whole side of the soundstage out.
It was the newest soundstage on the lot. They had just redone it. So innovation can be costly at times.
Yeah, sure can.
Do you take a little advice?
Sure.
Bring friends.
I worked on many shows with Dean, and he would just read the pages once and just get the general idea of what he's supposed to do, and the rest of it, he just kind of ad-lib and swing with it as he went.
But he used to do that on his television show. That's what was so great about him. There was a naturalness and a charm to the guy.
Here's where we're out in the Mojave Desert, where I had 18, 20 motorhomes and all the trailers and things or whatever, and it was 110, 15 degrees, and we're doing a fight out in the middle of this desert. With all these actors, you think, and all the stuntmen, you think it wasn't a mess?
You know, this is probably the first movie where I think the broad American audience saw Jackie Chan.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
no one ever saw this kind of thing. No. He had done some Chinese movies they were trying to get over here.
Yeah, but...
But no one ever was aware of Jackie till he did this movie. Well, here comes the Hell's Angels. The
well, here comes another star that came in for 2 days or 3 days or whatever. Peter Fonda, I'm talking about, you know.
Oh, Peter, yeah.
Yeah, he came in and played the leader of the bike gang.
There you go.
There he is.
Fresh off Easy Rider.
Yeah.
Bert Conley.
He was a friend of my cameraman, remember?
Michael Butler, yeah.
He was a friend of Butler's. They'd worked together. And Butler said... He had asked Butler if we could put him in the movie.
Really?
You can believe that. And so said, hell, tell him, yeah, we'll put him in.
Allow me to present myself. I'm on Wall Street. Maybe we can have lunch sometime. We don't ride in Wall Street.
Oh, what's the guy's name right there cutting a tie off? He was a stuntman, then he was an actor, and he worked with you on Longest Yard. And
Bob Tessier.
Tessier.
And yeah, it was one of the convicts of the Longest Yard.
Yeah, and he later died of cancer, but he was such a bad looker and such a nice guy.
Yeah, Mark.
I met him as a stuntman.
Oh, really? What's that?
Now, there's Peter. Must have gotten... We got nothing for Hoover. He's wearing a shirt.
Yeah.
That we got no money from.
How do we do that? How
did
we let one get away, didn't we?
Well, shall we join the fracas?
Here's where you get to see Jackie Chan at his best.
See Michael Hoy is
yeah.
The Chinese Charlie Chaplin. Look how clever he is.
Step back down. I must warn you. I'm Roger Moore. Roger Moore.
You run in there. Boom, 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 bam, bam, bam. Knock him flat out. Then we go. We can still win. Okay?
We can do it.
We can do that.
We can do that.
I'm trying to remember. I guess Captain Chaos was always in the original script. I'm trying to remember where that idea came from.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was in.
It was in Brock's script.
I don't remember who put it in, but it was always in there.
God, it was one of the funniest things in the movie. Because Dom's so outrageous.
Yeah. I mean, people don't realize it, but the scene they just saw there in that broken-down service station, there's probably 15, 18 stunt guys in that one little piece.
Where the place came in.
The guy's coming out the window and then dropping the roof on a whole
bunch. But I think you did this whole scene in a day, didn't you?
No, I think it took a couple of days, really, yeah. If I remember correctly.
It's a big one.
Hold it. You wouldn't last 5 minutes in a New York suburb. Now that's the way it's done.
Tried it.
You know, if you stop and think who's the most outrageous character in this movie, you'd have to really think.
Yeah, you gotta go away to find out.
But one of the lines I think they had in one of the posters was the popcorn's in the lobby, but the nuts are on the screen.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's true.
Yeah, everyone here is a freak. Farrah played an early Greens type, a college freak.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no one. I can't think of any straight character.
It wouldn't be Cannibal if it was straight.
No, there's no normal people.
But the road's open. Oh, thanks. Thunderbomb, the road's open.
He was quick, wasn't he?
Yeah. Especially with your stunt guys, you know?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, they do it in Hong Kong. They have their own guys. They do the shirt and they react. This is amazing to consider. As they say in China, these are all round eyes he's working with, you know?
But, and also the fact that my stunt guys are not necessarily karate.
I know. It's a real talent doing the martial arts stuff.
He was able to work with them pretty good.
Yeah, they were pretty good, too, to be able to work with them, react like that.
Look at this guy. I remember this scene. A place out here in the California desert where there has this undulating road, and I went out there and picked it up because just what you're seeing right there.
That's a great
shot. See him ducking in and out. That's strange how you see a shot in your mind. And we drove a long ways to get that, but...
it's worth it.
I thought it was worth it.
Oh, it is worth it. Oh, it's great. Captain Chaos.
I'll tell you one thing we didn't have to cheat on here. That van would outrun anything out there, including the Ferrari.
Really?
Yeah.
Did that have heavy suspension too, this baby?
Oh, this is the one, yeah.
Oh, that's the original.
Yeah.
Where was it from when you ran it to this movie? Where'd you keep the van?
I put it in a garage.
Did you?
Yeah.
You didn't drive it after
that, did you? No. I didn't know what to do with it, but then when we decided to do a movie, I said, I don't know what to do with it. Put it in the movie.
Okay. What's the name of the place we ended up? The King's Corner in Neptune? What's that restaurant?
The hotel restaurant we stopped at. I don't know, but it's the place where the race really ended.
Yeah.
And it's not in Long Beach. It's in Redondo.
It's Redondo Beach.
Beach, and
King's Harbor and Neptune's one of those.
I don't know. Maybe we'll see it here in a minute. I forgot.
What if it's still there?
Yeah, it's there because I saw Brock just last week, and he was going to go down there and talk to some people that he
knew. There's a lady that owned it. Remember?
I don't remember her name. But there was a lady that owned it.
Oh, that's one of the great gags of the world. This is George Hamilton. That was a scream.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, I believe this was the end of the movie where we shot this, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
right.
We did the
thing. We shot it right at the place where...
this again, all the cast came back for the end.
Yeah.
The beginning and the end.
The beginning and the end is the only
place
you get to see them all together. Yeah. I got to tell you something. Most of those people in there were the actors going down in that pile.
Yeah.
It's not a very sporting way to win. What do you say, Father?
No, sporting way. That's a shitty way to win.
That's my business manager. I put everybody in the movie.
I tell lady, I will take your baby. Have no fear. Over the bushes.
And loses the race.
He really got into this part, didn't he?
I saved that woman's dog.
Victor, we could have won that race. You understand what I'm telling you? We could have won it.
You understand that?
You had to go and pull that stupid stunt.
He's right.
No, he's hurt.
Yeah.
We are sick of Captain Chaos. We are so sick
but again,
of
you
Captain
love,
Chaos.
You loved all the people in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody.
Not
going
to be any more Captain Chaos. Come on! You see what I'm telling you?
Captain Chaos.
No more Captain Chaos. What do you think of that?
It's slapstick, but to me it's funny.
I've always wanted to be Captain USA.
Captain USA.
See, it breaks up Burnaby. He can't help it. Yeah, nobody can.
No, they're all, yeah. They're all having a good time. Look at Dean on the left.
There's no put on there. They're all having a ball. You know what? You did something here, Ruddy, in the music, at the end to give it that final end with that really up thing.
There was
took
a
all them kids and...
Yeah, we got that. You know, we wanted to get the carpenter sing that thing. And it was too expensive for us. So we wrote this tune. We got all the kids to sing it. We did this tune ourselves.
To me, it's perfect for ending the film.
Yeah, it's a beautiful ending. I mean, it's bright and happy.
Yeah. Oh, we got to have one more stunt before we leave this thing.
Mr. Foote.
This is the payoff to the car.
Lighter, of course. That's odd.
Another bloopers are coming up, which I must say, no one had done before either.
You know something?
And a lot of people copied this later.
I know. Well, you know what? The bloopers and blunders and all that stuff on television is my creation, even though I don't get credit for it because I started doing it in film. But you know something? And I go to movies to watch my film and audiences that don't know I'm there. And it doesn't say the end. It'll just go black for a beat, and then the credits start coming on. And you see people start getting up.
I know.
And other people will say, sit down, because they know all the bloopers are coming up. Like right here, it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Dom DeLuise can't keep from laughing. Bert pulls his mustache, hits him in the nuts.
Smacks him 2-3 times.
Yeah, watch it. It's funny as shit. I mean, And everybody's goofy now. He don't know where to hold his mustache or his balls. He don't know where Bert's going to hit him. He pulls his mustache to try to get him. And look, there's Elam looking out the side there. And as I said, it's 4 o'clock in the goddamn morning. Look at Bert.
That's where he smacks him a
you
couple
think this
times.
Ain't,
Yeah, this was not designed as bloopers. This is from actually shooting.
Yeah. But when they screw up, they know it's going to be in the bloopers.
Where is it going to sit?
Oh, now he goes along with Dean, where he goes to bleed.
Yeah.
Stephen,
put away
Seymour Goldfarb.
Yeah.
You see, even in
Goldfarb, that was his name.
Yeah, Seymour Goldfarb.
Yeah.
Molly Picon was the mother. She did all that Yiddish theater in New York. It was his mother.
As you probably know, we're the favorites to be the winner.
You know what? It's kind of cheating. Because all the people over here on the left in the credits, nobody's looking at it. Nobody reads it. Of course, nobody reads credits anyway, I don't think.
No. The audience is out of the theater by now.
Cares?
If you didn't have this. It's actually a way to guarantee whatever exposure they get at the end because the audience would be gone. They stayed for this.
People tell me that they love to see this because it lets them know how much fun we had making the movie, and therefore it lets them leave the theater with a more of a feeling of enjoyment, that they could see where the fun of the movie is.
Well, you also get a sense of the actors, you know, the fact that by nature they were having a good time making it.
You know what we got to do? Got to do another cannonball.
We're going to do it.
Okay.
Cannonball in Europe.
Is that a promise?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
No.
I'm ready. I'll button my coat and I'm packed.
This is the bleeds.
Yeah.
No. You gotta shove those beads up your
nose. These bleeds.
Bleeds. Now, look, there you are walking by the camera laughing.
I tell you what, when your actors can't keep it straight, you know they're having fun. You know when they're all breaking up and everything. Like Bert can't hardly to keep a straight face.
Look at Dean. Look at Dean on the left. He's cracking up.
Yeah.
Because it really was the last day of shooting.
Yeah.
You know, it was like the end of a long road. It was fun.
Why were you laughing?
Because he laughed and you hit me.
There he is, the kid himself.
Okay,